We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Every once in a while, you need a jolt into the reality that is your political atmosphere. And I'm talking to you, all you folks out there in the Patriot Movement, all you political junkies, all you folks that live, breathe, eat, sleep politics all the time, those folks that are plugged in and are truly informed and engaged and work for candidates and work for causes, there are no truer patriots than you folks out there. However, there are a lot of times, most of our reality may be totally obscured and disengaged because we are so cut off from what the rest of America is living. And there is no better time to get to check in with reality than when you take a look at election results. Good evening, this is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Yesterday, across the state of Missouri, we had municipal elections statewide. Had them in my county, St. Charles County, very Republican county. All across the state, there were school board elections, there were tax propositions, there were elections for fire districts and community colleges and just all kinds of things all across the state. And we had a bunch of issues, had several here in St. Charles County, had issues all across the state, lots of taxes. Patrick Warner of Americans for Prosperity was on last week to talk about all of the tax issues that come up on the ballot in these hard times. You know, people aren't working. We're all facing Obamacare in a few months. People's hours are cut. People's salaries are cut. You know, times are tough for everybody. And yet, our local politicians and our municipal governments, at the closest level of government that we can touch, you know, we can touch these folks. We can call them. We can contact them. They're accessible to us. They continue to put ballot initiatives in front of us asking for money, which just amazes me. And I know there are a lot of people out there, it amazes them too, but it just amazes me that they continue to come to us for money. Do you know why they continue to come for us money for money? Do you know why you are so amazed and shocked and just appalled by this? And no one, and your neighbor is not? Because you are living completely separate realities. And it just, last night I was at a friend's home. We were watching election returns. There was a big school board election in my area. We, you know, some folks have worked very hard to make a difference, especially with the Common Core issue that's going on in the country. And, you know, it's going on here in Missouri. We've implemented Common Core. You know, there are a lot of people that are fired up and engaged and have gotten educated about what Common Core is, and they want to get on the school boards and make a difference. We had some folks here in my area doing that as well. And, you know, we ran up against the same opposition that we've been running up against. I first became aware of it about 15 years ago, but I'm sure it's been going on much longer than that. I ran for the school board 15 years ago and won. I'm not sure that was a good thing. But I learned about, you know, what people with passion who've become informed and engaged, what they know, how they feel, what they think, the difference between those people and the average everyday person who is just living their life, going to work, raising their kids, going to soccer practice, going to church, and how disengaged, and, you know, how those disengaged folks, how they're really running the show. And that's the person, and this is a this should be a huge message, because it's all about who you can, who your demographic is, who your target audience is. Those are the people that the politicians know how to market to. They know what the demographic is. They know who their target audience is to get what they want. And they are very good at targeting that. While the rest of us, stupid patriots, are floundering around, working hard, going door to door, spending our evenings, spending our weekends, you know, trying to educate folks on Facebook and, you know, Twitter, blogs, whatever, and thinking that we're doing a really good job of getting information out there, the reality is we are not doing a good job of reaching outside the bubble. And I've had this rant many, many times on this show. You've heard me talk about it before many, many times. And it just hit me, it just hit me square in the face again last night. For example, okay, we were watching the election returns, and there were a number of issues going on. One was a school board issue, and it was the NEA against candidates who are not NEA. And I'm telling you, it wasn't as the most bitter fight that I saw, but when the NEA sniffs opposition, they come out in force. And they came out in force. And I'm telling you, these folks that ran for the school board election spent a lot of money and a lot of their a lot of their time and energy campaigning, going around campaigning, trying to get folks educated, you know, knocking on doors. And it was not a real successful election. I think there were three seats open, had three major NEA candidates and three non-NEA candidates trying to take back the school board in my area. One of those people got elected very narrowly. The other two were the NEA folks, and they won. Our school board is still dominated by NEA. Now, most of you folks know what that means, but the average folks out in my neighborhood do not have the slightest idea what it means to run up against an NEA candidate. They just don't understand it. They think that it's their school. The teachers are telling them to vote for X, Y, and Z candidate. They're trusting their teachers. So they think that everything is just fine and dandy. And it's not. You know, it couldn't be farther from the truth. They don't understand how when you vote for a union-supported candidate, whether it's on a school board, whether it's in the fire district, whether it's, you know, for anything like that, that basically people are hiring their own bosses who are controlling the money. And, you know, no matter how hard you work, because you know how hard you work for these things, you know how hard you go out and campaign for these things. But the reality is, during an April election, the opposition knows there's very low voter turnout. Voter turnout is abysmally low. And they get their own folks to turn out, which they do so much better than anything that we do. No matter how hard we work, we cannot get the folks to come out and vote in these off elections, which is a really big problem. That's one of the areas that the grassroots really needs to address, which, again, like you've heard before in this program a million times, it's about stepping outside your bubble and going beyond your comfort zone to reach folks outside of your comfort zone. You got to start educating these folks on how this works, because you are never going to win these municipal elections, these elections that are right in your backyard. You're never going to win them if you don't start reaching out to that populace, the one that the politicians can so effectively market themselves to. Those folks, they don't read the newspaper. They don't read blogs. They don't listen to talk radio. They pay attention to the mailers that they get in the mail 3 days before the election. They may hear something from the teachers at their school. They may hear something at work. They don't pay attention. They're the soundbite target audience. They may get a robocall. Maybe they'll listen to it most time. That makes people angry. But that's who they listen to. We had another initiative, too, a minute ago when I was talking about tax initiatives. Okay, I live in St. Charles County. We had a fire district tax that was put up. Again, our fire district wants several million dollars to do whatever they want to do with it. I wrote an article on Examiner.com, and it's up on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page, and I'll put it up on the website tonight. That fire board spends 89% of its budget on salary and benefits. And they effectively campaigned for a tax increase, which they lost last April. They effectively campaigned and won this tax increase by a margin of 58% to 41%. And how they did it? They did it by scaring the people, scare tactics at the last minute. If you don't give us this tax increase, we will not be able to drive to your house on time when you have a heart attack and you will die. And that is the only thing that people heard. Now, folks, they're not going to increase. I mean, there's not going to be any increase in response times to this ambulance districts. It's ridiculous. This is about fiscal responsibility. But that message never got across to the people who went to the polls, the few people that went to the polls. Most of those folks were union folks. I'm telling you, they raised a lot of money. Most of it was by paramedics that funded their own campaign for their own pay raises. But people must have more money out there than we think they have. You know, disposable income must be a lot better than what we think. People must not be hurting enough. I would have not guessed that would be the case, but I'm telling you, going over these election returns last night just absolutely floored me. You know, how can you defeat a tax increase 1 year and they come back with the very same tax increase a year later and just win it by huge margins? And it just makes you wonder, what are people thinking? We had another initiative in the municipality where I live, where they put on the ballot, they wanted $52 million. Part of that was to build a new police station because we have a boutique fire department in my municipality, you know, that doesn't call on the sheriff. You know, we don't contract with the sheriff's department. We have our own boutique fire department. And they wanted a bigger justice center, more jails, more space, nicer locker rooms for the police officers. All that's very nice and fine. And they also wanted $18 million of that to go to developing a park. Somebody donated land for a park. So we need, and I can tell you, I live smack dab in the middle of several parks, but we needed $18 million more to develop a park. So here's the mindset of the folks that came out to vote yesterday. They narrowly defeat, and, you know, I don't think we need it either. I'll just go on record as saying that. I voted no for both of those initiatives, but they narrowly defeated the initiative for the Justice Center, and they overwhelmingly approved the park. So what's going to happen in about another year? They're going to come back with that initiative for the Justice Center, and people will vote for it. People will vote for it, and we'll be $50 million in the hole when it's all said and done. But, you know, what are people thinking? They voted for a park? You would think that they would be more concerned with their safety because, I mean, that's certainly how they marketed the issue. You know, vote for your safety, vote for better response times, a more centrally located justice center in the municipality, yada, yada. That was narrowly defeated. And they voted for another park. There's a million parks where I live. So, folks, here's the deal. It's just, we need to start thinking differently in the grassroots movement. You know, we're all surrounded by each other. We all kind of have the same logic on many of the issues. You know, we're not lockstep on everything, but we agree on so many things. But I'm telling you, we are not effectively targeting the people outside the bubble. And this issue, you know, it just takes an issue like watching election results in these small municipal elections to show you how absolutely ridiculous it's just absolutely ridiculous. We are so missing the mark. And when it comes down to later on, when we get to the point where we're dealing with the larger elections, the November elections, the general elections, watch the way they market to the folks outside the bubble. They're not targeting to you. They don't care about you. They don't care what you think because you're not, you know, you're not enough to win or lose an election over. If you want to influence elections, folks, we need to stop hammering on. First of all, we need to stop talking to each other, and then we need to stop worrying about what the politicians want and what they think, and we need to start going outside our bubble, expanding our reach, going outside our comfort zone to educate folks better. It's hard work. It's not comfortable always, but I'm telling you, our reality is just absolutely different than what we think it is a lot of the times. And the results continue to show that we are missing the mark. And to be able, to be able to understand what people are thinking, you've got to be able to step outside the bubble and step inside their shoes and look inside their heads and wonder what they're thinking. You know, wonder what's important to them. They're pretty easy to market to, evidently, because I'm telling you, you can get millions of dollars out of these folks with very easy messaging. The politicians and the left know how to do it very well. We need to take that message and run with it. It's absolutely amazing how that works. So anyway, my reality check yesterday from the general elections. A lot of other things up in the air tonight too. Right to work in Missouri is the next hot topic. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, too. And I think we're also, that's another area where I really think that we are missing the mark heavily. And unless maybe somebody, can explain it to me. Because I'm completely confused. We are living in a reality where there are a lot of folks here that want right to work. We're a depressed economy. Missouri's not doing that well. You know, we have a lot of folks that are out of work again. A lot of industry has moved out of our state, gone to other states. And Missouri's just not doing great. And there's a right to work vote. There's a ballot initiative vote going. I think it went through the House today. I think it passed, and it has been the push of the grassroots to get this thing through. We're going to talk about that today, and I'm going to talk about why I think that is the wrong way to go. I think it is going to sabotage right to work. I think it's intentionally being put through to sabotage right to work, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on, as well as some other things that are going on across the country. There's a last week we had a conversation. We started a conversation about toxins in our food and what the government was intentionally allowing to be released in our food and how it's affecting our health. We have Dr. Josephine Lee up a little bit later. I told you we'd have an expert on to talk about this kind of issue, to talk about what this is doing to your body, how you can recognize it, how you can treat it, and how you can eliminate it. Get one step ahead of the government. Don't, and I've told people privately in private conversations, I think we're being poisoned, because if you do any research on this at all, there's so much that's going on in our food supply, and if you look at all the diseases that are going on across the country with people that, you know, I never grew up there was just stuff that was never there, and the mass numbers that it is now, there's a reason for it. We're going to talk to Josephine Lee about it. And in a minute, we're going to talk to Paul Ellison from American Spring, and he's going to talk about yet another case in Missouri. Folks, I mean, you know, we've talked about the Justina Pelletier case here extensively. Paul Ellison was on a few weeks ago to talk about a case where the Missouri a school in Camden County was overriding the judge's parenting plan and getting involved in custody issues, places where they had no business of being. There's yet another case has surfaced in that county. We're going to take a very quick break, put Paul on the line, and get into that a little deeper. Stay with us.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
So dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you are listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And Culture Vigilante, we're here every Wednesday evening with you. Just wanted to give you a little quick update on the Justina Pelletier case. LifeNews.com released a story yesterday. Legislators introduced bill to return custody of Justina Pelletier to her parents. Massachusetts state legislators have filed a bill that would force state officials to return custody of Justina Pelletier to her parents. Justina Pelletier's medical condition has dramatically worsened since her wrongful imprisonment and mismanaged medical care by the Massachusetts Department of Children and Families. So supporters of her family are urging the legislature to act fast on a bill. I don't know why everybody thinks filing a bill is going to solve all our problems. I'm sure there are already laws in force to take care of this if anybody would force them. This past Friday, April 4th, Bill HD 1412 was written by Mass Resistance, was filed by the Massachusetts legislature. It will free Justina Pelletier from state custody immediately and return her to her parents' custody. It's a simple and unambiguous solution to a situation that has become a national nightmare, the pro-life group Mass Resistance told Life News in an email. The goal is to have Justina back in Connecticut with her family for Easter, the end of next week. This could theoretically happen very quickly, but everyone's help, even outside Massachusetts, is needed, it said. Passing the bill like this ought to make it a no-brainer. But unfortunately, in the Massachusetts State House, it's not. As usual, the politicians are full of fear and inertia. There is a disturbing reluctance to get involved, a stark contrast to the people across the country wringing their hands over this. Justina Pelletier's shocking story has caused enormous outrage across the country and across the political spectrum. This nightmare needs to stop. And it goes on. This is a nightmare. And I don't know why people think that they need to file legislation to fix everything. And it kind of tells me that if there's a problem with folks getting involved, legislators getting involved, that people don't want to fix the problem, that they're fine with the situation the way it is. This article goes on. Does DCF have a blank check in this case? It's time that we as legislators now know how much money is being spent in the Pelletier matter. Representative Mark Lombardo commented, the administration has indicated that DCF lacks the resources necessary to carry out their duties. If this is true, why is DCF spending what appears to be endless amounts of money fighting to keep a loving family and their daughter apart? Over 130 children under DCF care currently, with over 130 children under DCF care currently missing, it might be time for DCF to reevaluate their priorities. Lou Pelletier is the father of 15-year-old Justina Pelletier, has denounced Justina's abuse under the DCF supervision as nothing short of torture, and it's true, the poor girl's being tortured. Massachusetts State Representative Jim Lyons and Mark Lombardo request the chairman of the House Committee on Post-Audit and Oversight convene this investigation into the amount of taxpayer dollars that has been spent on Justina Pelletier's case since the state first intervened over 14 months ago. Just amazing. So the saga continues. I hate to say it. I think it's quite certain that this girl is going to die in the care of Department of Family Services in Massachusetts for no good reason. And I think the question is really very pertinent. And in most of these cases, it's about money. We know that the federal government gives money to states in many cases like this to keep kids in the system. Possibly that's what's happening here with Justina. We don't know for sure. But it's abysmal. And we've also discussed here in this program, this is not the only case that in the country. It happens all over the country. It's been happening all over the country for decades, different levels, different types of situations, but the Department of Family Services and courts all over the country are working to devalue the family rights, the parental rights of folks to take care of their kids, to maintain custody of their kids. And Paul Ellison is on with us tonight. He was on with us a few weeks ago to talk about another family in Camden County, and yet another case has sprung up. Thanks for being with me tonight, Paul.
Well, thank you for having me, Lisa. It's a pleasure.
Okay. Very complicated, I understand. I listened to your show about this case. I know we're tiptoeing around some issues, but let's backtrack just a little bit before we get into this new case. Let's kind of give just a very quick overview of the last case that you talked about when you were on the show. Please pronounce the family's name for me.
Sure. It's Lagares.
Lagares.
That's the first case. Yeah. That's the first case that we discussed. And currently, things are still moving through the 26th Judicial Circuit in Missouri. There is a trial set for the end of this month, in which Denny Lagares, the father of two children, his parental rights have currently been stripped from him through the Lebanon School District. And currently, again, the trial at the end of the month will be to bring some permanent resolution to this custody rewrite that has been done through the school and through its administration and lawyers.
And just to recap very quickly, that family had a custody plan in place.
They did.
And the school stepped in and refused to honor it.
They did. And in this case, you know, it's what really is troublesome about the Lagares case is that it wasn't restricted to one school district. Initially, the school had targeted one of the Lagares children in Camdenton in that school district in 2010, and they issued a charge of educational neglect that was really unfounded, and yet the threat was issued. At that time, Mr. Lagares took that child out of the Camdenton school district, only to find later, after having gone through a divorce and having finalized that divorce through the court process, that the school, through its special education administrative staff and the attorneys, the law firm of Mickus, Goldman, and O'Toole, which, of course, in St. Louis, that may ring a few bells.
Yeah, it rings a lot of bells with me.
Right. That law firm, of course, represents over 300 districts in our state. So when the children were put into the new school in Lebanon, the same kind of selective targeting immediately displayed itself in their case. In less than a month after having enrolled the children in the Lebanon School District, the special education administrator, Dr. Tammy Lapartis, and the school's attorneys had decided that they had the right to essentially redraw a custody plan outside of that, which had already been decided by the courts just a couple of months previous. And currently, as a result, Denny is now restricted to 1 hour a week of supervised DFS visits at the DFS facility. And the children are in an environment which is less than ideal for them personally. It's an ongoing case. There have been, of course, a federal lawsuit filed in this case by the Ligaris parents, and it's been filed under color of law because, in addition to the school district itself, there is ample evidence, solid documented proof, that several different government entities, from the Camden County Sheriff's Department to the judicial circuit itself, that these have been involved in this case in order to literally take away this man's or this person's rights to his own children, and it's something that unfortunately isn't unique here. Before you brought me on, you were talking about the Peltier case, and in this second case that we have started to bring forward, there are a lot of similarities or a lot of parallels in the second case that we have that kind of, ironically enough, when the Ligaris family was appearing in court for one of the many different court appearances they've had regarding this, the family met a young lady named Shuela Miller, who was dealing with many of the same problems. And as we have started looking at her story and all of the things and facts related to her case, what has emerged is deeply disturbing on several levels. And her parental custody rights now are being attacked in much the same way that Denny's were.
So... Okay, from listening to your broadcast, I mean, I understand there are some things that, you know, it's kind of in the works. It's a little sensitive right now, but
mm-hmm.
right off the bat, I mean, this is a case with a family. The child in question, they're actually children. There are three children, but
right.
One of the children in question has some learning disabilities, maybe some emotional issues. Is a little troubled for various reasons, with not receiving the care and the proper attention through IEPs and those kinds of things in the school. Don't want to go into a lot of detail about that. That kind of stuff happens a lot in schools, and it's wrong and it's troubling but it's not necessarily. I mean, it's the springboard for something else.
That's exactly right. Unfortunately, we did start with. The school's involvement in this case because it is kind of our focus point as far as looking at the school's role in these custody cases, because there is an assumption of authority by the schools in regards to parental rights. And that assumption of authority is illegal. It's against the letter of the law. It goes against what we know and believe as parents to be our own roles in raising our children. And when we started this case, we did start talking about the school first because some of the issues to come out of the school regarding some of the children's behaviors are being used in the court system to negatively affect the mother in trying to preserve her custody rights.
Absolutely.
And it's important in this case, and I think to kind of give a little bit of an overview. This is a case where the mother has had custody of her children essentially for the entire time since she was divorced from the ex-husband. Her custody rights were not disputed until just recently, a couple of years ago, the process was started. And what's happened after the ex-husband has filed court proceedings in order to try to get the custody agreement changed in his favor, a lot of things have started to happen that have really drawn questions from myself and those people that have been looking at this case. And I mentioned that there are some parallels to the Peltier case. And in this case, we have young children who didn't experience these behavioral or emotional outbursts until they started visiting their ex or their father. Those are clearly related to the experiences the children are having while in his custody. And what's happening is through the use of the court system, these behavioral issues have now, according to Judge Aaron Coppin in the 26th District, he has essentially made it a court order that the children be seen by Pathways, behavioral. I'm sure that you're mm-hmm. familiar with Pathways. And what we found is that one of these children, the oldest of these children, is a young child, I should add that. I'm not really going to give the age at this point on the air. We're trying to kind of maintain the privacy of the children in this case.
Right.
But the oldest child is being medicated with Prozac.
Oh, my God.
And exactly. And the mother can't do anything about this exactly because, you know, it's court ordered that they go to Pathways. Pathways is ordering the medication.
Well, to explain a little bit about what Pathways is. It's a counseling service, yes?
It is. It's a behavioral service. It's a private. It's spread extensively, at least, throughout central Missouri. I've seen Pathways offices all around in the middle of the state. It's an organization that's used a lot by Department of Family Services and others in order to get psychological workups and care, et cetera, for children who are in these type of custody situations, in addition to a lot of other types of things that they do regarding substance abuse and things of that nature.
Okay, let's stop for just a second and talk about these organizations, because I think that it's important for the audience to understand how this perpetuates the problem. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say 20, 30 years ago, we did not have court systems so readily willing to go into psychiatric evaluations or psychiatric issues in these kinds of cases. And I'm telling you, it goes on in almost every case now. We have psychiatric evaluations from everybody who has ever breathed a breath that ever walked into a courthouse. And these courthouses, these local and municipal courts contract with their favorite organizations to get this done.
Exactly right.
Yes, and it's always the same organizations that do this. They make lots and lots of money, you know, performing these court-ordered evaluations and these court-ordered tests. And so they're going to give the kinds of results that the courts are looking for. They're not an unbiased. There's not an independent entity here working for the best interests of anybody. They're going to maintain their business relationship with the courts because it's in their best interest to do so. Thus,
that's exactly right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen it a million times.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, and if you tried, and I've seen this too, if you have tried to hire your own psychiatric evaluator, your own counselor, your own therapist, your own whatever, the courts won't allow it. They won't go for it.
It's even more insidious than that, Lisa. In this particular case, one of the Pathways staff members who was dealing with these children came to the mother and specifically spelled out, this just isn't right. That what's going on here with these children, with this, it's not right. I'll testify in
court. Wow.
That person, that staff member,
she disappeared.
Was fired.
Yeah.
Was fired and was sent out, or maybe let me make this. I think they were sent out of state and then fired. Is how it worked in order to keep them out of the court case, because this was somebody who was willing to come forward and say, you know, the issues that are going on in this case are not, you know, this is everything about this case and how it's being presented to me. You know, these children's interests are not being looked after in any way at all.
I've heard similar stories. Yeah, that happens. I think it's a racket, folks. It's a racket, and it just perpetuates the problem. So anyway, I'm sorry. I interrupted you there. So the kids are being at least one of the children, young children, is being prescribed Prozac by this court-ordered psychiatric entity to mm-hmm. keep the kid under control. Now, okay, so, and I think it's also very interesting to note, this is a case about discrimination against the mother. The last time you were on with me, it was a case about discrimination against the father. And it's also
right.
very important for folks to know, this is not about men versus women. This is about the destruction of your parental rights and your family unit.
It absolutely is. You know, it again, we started with the school angle simply because, you know, the schools all across Missouri are playing a role in this. I think that after having looked now at five different cases in central Missouri alone, it's clear that there is a game plan in place. And it is being performed and exercised through our schools. And I know that, Lisa, you have talked about Common Core rolling out in our schools at different points.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I'd like to folks to really grab onto is that this is the end result. It's a system that profits off each failure. And
yep.
by using the schools in order to come in and strip away a parent's rights, and getting involved, as you said, Lisa, with these private entities that then make a determination about psychological health, we're really going, and you can almost look backward in time at Stalin's Russia and see how these exact same psychological arguments were used in order to silence people from trying to speak out or even having the desire to do so.
I couldn't have said it better. And I think that you kind of touched on something. There's no impetus to try to come to a good or logical conclusion. There is validation and profit into maintaining the dysfunction.
Absolutely.
And I mean, which is exactly the opposite of how the court situation is supposed to operate. There is no accountability attached to this. The folks that we're looking to be accountable have no accountability, and even they're the ones who are stirring the pot, you know. And again, the judges are not requiring, you know, the judges are sitting on the bench and they are not requiring any accountability or any reasonableness for these kids to be, for them to be treated with.
None whatsoever. And,
how is it,
you know,
reasonable for kids to be on Prozac? I don't get that.
Well, frankly, it's unconscionable to me. We've heard and we know from the pharmaceutical companies themselves that this will induce suicidal thoughts in children, teenagers. This is not a drug that should be prescribed to any kid. And what's frightening about this, truly, is that these drugs are being administered in direct relationship to what the children are experiencing whenever they're in the father's custody. And this is clear, there are clear signs of abuse, which really, when you start to apply that to the family court system, you know, It's something that's so blatantly obvious that you really have to, you know, I hate to say this, but as we start looking around the country, and we have looked at the Peltier case in reference to this in order to kind of get an idea of how this fits in nationally with what's going on. As we look at it, you know, and we look around our own community here in central Missouri at the Lake of the Ozarks, I have to really ask the question if anyone follows the letter of the law or the intent. And I say that because there is no desire and no efforts being made by the legal system, by DFS, or any of these entities involved to really protect both the parents' rights and the well-being of the children.
So where are we with this case? I know that at this particular point in time, we can't go into a lot of details, but I am going to have you back to follow up as this unfolds, because I think that this is very important to for everybody to know that this goes on. You know, we've been following the Justina case for a while, but this has been going on for decades. It's going on with your neighbors. It's going on across the state, across the country. And it's just the atrocity that is being waged against these children is just unspeakable. It's unspeakable. Can you tell us anything about what's happening with this case, or do we need to kind of wait for things to unfold a little bit?
Well, there was a court proceeding today. The mother is, unfortunately, this is a situation that I'm sure that you've come across several times yourself, Lisa. This is a case where the mother has literally been almost bled dry financially.
Yeah.
She was told during her last court appearance prior to today by her lawyer that unless she could provide $16,000 right then, the lawyer was going to withdraw from the case, which she did. The mother has been a victim of this ongoing, it's almost like extortion demands from the bench, you know. And today she had to go in reference to a psychological report of her own that had not yet been produced by her former attorney. She produced the report, and what's ironic in this case is the family court, the judge, is presiding over the case. He makes her, of course, surrender that or turn in that psychological evaluation on herself. And the ex-husband has not yet even had such a psychological test performed, although he is supposed to have. It's never been done or turned in. It's very clear bias, and it's very clear bias in the case. In this case, it's very clear bias in favor of organizations like Pathways who continue to make these kids profit centers.
Oh, that's just despicable. Yeah, absolutely. You can you see case after case. I've seen it before too, where I mean, it's almost as if these cases are predetermined before they even get to court. And what happens is that they're allowed to escalate and go through their normal course. Lots of money changing hands, lawyers, counseling experts, studies, all kinds of money, subpoenas, whatever. And then the case turns out the way it was. You've been fighting and you don't get anywhere.
Right. I mean, it's just unfortunately, it's you know, I hope
it's an industry.
I hope you'll excuse this analogy, but it's kind of like a hamster wheel to hell. I mean, you know, I don't understand when it stops. I mean, because clearly it doesn't.
When the money runs out. You
know, I suppose so. And you know, we're seeing, and this may be unique to our area, but what we're seeing here is that there's a very determined effort to go after those most vulnerable to that kind of exploitation, to folks who really don't have thousands and thousands of dollars to spend on legal fees, and that is playing into part of the motive as you look at it from an outside perspective.
You bet. You bet. Okay, Paul, I really want to follow up on this case. We don't want to talk about too many of the details too early. You know, we don't want to upset the apple cart here. But I hope that you'll come back on with me and give us updates as this unfolds. Keep me posted.
It'll be my pleasure.
And you can go to AmericanSpring2011.com and read Paul there. And your radio show. Give me the ID for your radio show.
Sure. It's Guerrilla Radio with American Spring.
Okay, great. Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate you keeping us updated on this. Come back soon.
Thank you, Lisa.
Give them our best.
Will do. It's always a pleasure. Thanks again.
All right. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back with Dr. Joe Lee.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes, walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Last week, we started the discussion. Cindy McGee, my sidekick, who is, by the way, enjoying some great family time with her nieces and nephews and grandchildren and kids and whatever this week. Cindy and I are kind of health food, health crazy nuts, you know. We kind of believe in organic food and naturalness and all of that kind of thing. So we do the best that we can in the economy that we're in and the environment that we're in to be able to eat healthy foods, because we know that it affects us on a physical level in so many ways. And if you look around, like I was saying earlier in the program, there are so many issues with health today that just weren't there when I was growing up as a kid. So many allergies and different diseases and cancers more widespread and all of those kinds of things. And we talked about an article that was released not too long ago that the government was intentionally allowing these toxins to be released in our food. They were doing experiments on these things. So we have an expert with us tonight, Dr. Josephine Lee. You can read her blog, theinnatehealer.blog.com. She is a doctor of chiropractic medicine. She does practice in the St. Louis area. She's a fabulous doctor. I happen to know that personally. She's been my doctor in the past. And we're here with her tonight because she has spent a lifetime learning about the kinds of things that make your body react adversely, and we're going to identify some of those things tonight so that maybe you can start to look at the environment around you to and eliminate and to make healthier choices and improve the quality of your life. Dr. Lee, I am so pleased to have you on the program with me tonight. Thank you for being with me.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so many things to touch on tonight. You know, you and I have had conversations before in the past about, you know, the quality of the food that we eat, the toxins, and how they affect so many different things. I mean, I've come to you with certain health issues, and chiropractic medicine, I think, is a growing alternative medicine with the Obamacare situation happening. But also, people are really looking for answers that traditional medical doctors are just not giving them about so many issues. There's so many allergies. There's so many issues with thyroid. There's people are looking to, you know, eliminate cancers and arthritises and all of these things. I mean, we're kind of just being bombarded in our in our culture.
Yeah, in fact, I was listening to you like talking earlier about Justina's Pelletier's condition, and she was diagnosed with mitochondrial disease. And I think it really that is one of the problems today is that is toxicity. You know, the mitochondrial disease is a very complicated condition. And I think toxicity in our environment, our food and the air is going to, just kind of throw a monkey wrench into this condition and make it worse. So,
what is mitochondrial disease, actually? What is it? What causes it?
Well, mitochondrial disease is a kind of a genetic, it's a genetic problem. It's extremely complicated. Right now, we're just starting to understand, the implication. Now, mitochondria is a small little organ found in our cells. So first of all, we understood that before that it's responsible for making energy. It's called ATP. But now we found that mitochondria is not only making ATP, but also have other functions in our body. On top of that, there are, every cell type have their own unique mitochondria. And so these mitochondria are extremely susceptible to, free radical damage. So free radicals are usually, there's so many different kind of free radicals, but main thing is that we make it ourselves, but it also we can get them from our food and from our environment, especially like a lot of the pollution, the pesticides and the chemicals, the PCB and, the plastic chemicals, they all can generate free radicals that can damage the mitochondria. Mm. So basically, mitochondria, people with mitochondrial disease can range from asymptomatic to all the way from, very debilitated and early death. But...
go ahead.
So I think the most important thing is for us is that because it's so susceptible to toxicity damage, free radical damage, now I think if we can avoid toxicity, we'll be able to learn things that we eat food and or maybe supplementation that can reduce this free radical damage and also support nutrients to support the body's ability to detox and to generate energy to support the production of more hormones and neurotransmitters and all of those things will help our body to function better. And then even if you have inherited some kind of this mitochondrial weakness, you'll be able to overcome that. That's why there's certain people would like when you do genetic counseling or analysis, some people would have the weakness, but they don't have the symptoms. So this is it's very difficult to really pinpoint who would succumb to the problem or who would be able to override it and survive it or do well in spite of it. So I think one of the main things is to focus on our food and and be able to get rid of the toxins that are accumulating in our body.
So when somebody comes to your office and they have an ailment, you know, they have maybe joint pain or they have what they consider, thyroid disease is a big one. A lot of people have issues with thyroid disease. It may, correct, I know, lead me down the right path here. It may be thyroid issues or it may be a toxicity in your body causing your thyroid to malfunction?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, first of all, you know, if you look at our body, how our body functions, you know, how our body can function well is basically when you look at it, you know, it's two things. You know, you have the body have to have, you know, sufficient amount of nutrients, the right kind of nutrients, the vitamins and minerals, and nowadays we know the phytochemicals from plant food. And then our body has to be able to get rid of the toxicity that we produce ourselves, inside ourselves, you know, or from the environment. Well, when those two are balanced, then we'll be able to do well. We kind of like, you know, our health is really depends on a balance, a yin and yang in Chinese medicine. But in, you know, Western way of thinking is that, you know, we have to have the nutrients. We have to be able to get rid of the toxins. So when those are balanced, then we'll be able to do well. So in the case of thyroid problem, and we know that, you know, in order to make thyroid hormone, we have to have certain nutrients. We have to have selenium. We have to have tyrosine, which is an amino acid from protein. And we also need to have iodine. So if we have a deficient in those nutrients, then we're going to have a hard time making those hormones. But also, there's a lot of things that can interfere with our body's ability to make thyroid hormone. So toxicity all come into place, and we found that certain microbial toxins that can be released from our gut by pathological bacteria can block our ability to activate the thyroid hormone from the inactive form to the more active form. So that can be a problem. And also these microbial toxins can sometimes mimic, like, you know, act like thyroid tissues. When they deposit, you know, when they attach to the thyroid tissue, the body actually produces antibodies against our own thyroid. So it can actually create an autoimmune problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be, you know, if you're deficient in the minerals and the amino acid to make thyroid hormone, at the same time you have toxicity issue, then you kind of like, you know, your gut, you know, into a, you know, between a rock and a hard place.
So it's not another thing I was kind of curious about. I have so many questions. So, I mean, thyroid is it's very prevalent now kind of in the culture. A lot of people have what they think are thyroid issues. They could not be thyroid issues. But what we do know is that the thyroid produces hormones that regulate every organ in your body.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know, the natural place to look is, oh, it's a thyroid issue. But maybe it's not a thyroid issue. I mean,
right.
People have symptoms for all kinds of things. How do you determine what it is? It's just huge.
Well, it's a lot of time you have to look at the overall, look at all the other, you know, factors. So, like, if you come in with a thyroid problem, and a lot of time today it's an autoimmune problem. So the thyroid itself is not the problem, but it's that, you know, the body's is mounting an autoimmune attack on a thyroid. So you have to look at the gut problem. You know, you might have a gut, you know, issue that have, like, the bacteria in your gut is releasing toxins that can, you know, trigger the autoimmune attack. And other problems also, it's a stress issue. If you have a lot of stress, the hormone cortisol can actually suppress the conversion of the thyroid hormone from an active form is called T4, to the active form is called T3. So if you have a lot of stress and your cortisol level is high, that can also lower your thyroid function. In a way, it could be a protective mechanism that can, because it's kind of like if you're really stressed out, and the stress hormone can be very, very damaging to our musculoskeletal system, our tissue, our soft tissue, like our joints. And it can be also very detrimental to our, you know, our brain, and immune system. So the body kind of like, you know, in their own innate wisdom will actually slow down the thyroid, so it won't, you know, won't allow the, you know, the thyroid hormone, the you know, the adrenal hormone, the cortisol, to break down the body as readily. So in fact, you know, if I just give you an example how powerful cortisol is. You know that the salmon, you know that, you know, you know when they usually swim upstream to the birthplace, and you know they release the eggs and they for the next generation, and this salmon will actually literally deteriorate. You know, they will break down and die within, you know, after a few days after they spawn. And the reason is that the scientists found out that they actually have a huge release of cortisol right after the spawning. And then the cortisol is what responsible for the quick breakdown of the body and kill them. And actually, they were able to, you know, if they would take away the adrenal gland after they spawn, they actually can live for another, you know, year or so.
Really?
So this shows that the cortisol is an extremely damaging hormone if we allowed it to go on, you know, on for a long time. Like we do today, we are under so much stress.
Mm-hmm.
This chronic stress is literally, you know, creating, you know, a situation that's chronically breaking down our system. So
it's not just an issue of looking at your cortisol. It's not just an issue of looking at your thyroid. You kind of have to look at the bigger picture. It's the forest for the trees kind of a deal.
Right. You have to look at, like, the overall, you know, the stress. Where are the stress coming from? So you have really high cortisol level. Why? So for some people, it could be just because they are, you know, burning the candle on both ends. They're working really hard trying to maybe, you know, go to school or maybe, start a business. Or maybe they just, say, you know, like mothers. I know so many young mothers have thyroid problems. You know, it's because
that is very typical. Is it necessarily? I experience this too. So young mothers have thyroid problems. It's a huge change in your life, and it's a lot of work to take care of young kids. Is it a thyroid issue, or is it being triggered by the toxins that we are being exposed to? You know,
well,
my
yeah.
parents.
You have to look. Yeah, you have to look for them. You know, you have to look for those. You know, nowadays we are subjected to toxicity 100% of the time. You know, EPA found that we have, you know, all kinds of chemicals, styrene and PCBs and, you know, dioxins, and 100% of our cells contain, you know, these toxins.
Let's talk about that part of it. Let's talk about the toxins that we're exposed to, because my parents and your parents didn't grow up with that much pollution in their atmosphere.
Right.
You know,
our
generation now is just experiencing health problems on a much wider level than our parents did. Now, I know that we live longer today, but it still seems like there are allergies and autoimmune diseases are huge.
Right.
It just, am I missing something here?
Well, in fact, like, you know, if you look at thyroid problem, you know, most of, in fact, I know upward to like 80 to 90% of hypothyroidism is caused by autoimmune, problem. And a lot of people are not looking at that angle. And then, you know, okay, you have a thyroid, you know, low thyroid will give you some, you know, thyroxine or, you know, some kind of, you know, thyroid medication. But actually, if you have an autoimmune problem, the thyroid medication is going to cause more problem down the road than, because you're not correcting the problem. So
how do you address that? How do we go to? So if you're taking thyroid medication, it's not working. You know, is it just a hit and miss? You just keep trying until you find the right thing. What do you do?
Well, I would look for the a lot of them just because of toxicity issue. You know, a leaky gut. You know, like nowadays we learn a lot about, you know, small intestine, you know, bacteria overgrowth. And a lot of these bacteria can, you know, release toxins that can trigger these autoimmune problems. So a lot of times you can heal the leaky gut and, take care of that inflammatory problem going on in the gut. then you know, a lot of thyroid problem will resolve. And another thing too, like about 80 to 90% of hypothyroidism has, you know, people with have gluten sensitivity.
Right.
There's a lot of that now. Right. The gluten sensitivity could be caused by, you know, not because of the, you know, not a genetic problem, but it could be because of the inflammatory condition going on in the gut that allow gluten, which is a very large protein molecule that, you know, can enter into the bloodstream and trigger, a reaction. So you have to, like, look at, like, maybe eliminating the, you know, the gluten sensitivity by, you know, avoiding eating gluten-containing food. And you have to find a way to balance the inflammatory condition in the gut, you know, heal the gut, you know, basically seal up the leaky gut, you know, that the inflammation caused. And then, you know, you have to also, like, reduce some of this toxic burden in the system that would allow the immune system to function properly.
Okay. So if we get to the point where we can identify what the toxicity is, how does one go about detoxifying?
Well, there's a lot of different ways you can you know, and in fact, you know, if you look at you know, just you know, our diet, basically, you know, in order to detox, you have to first of all stop putting in, you know, the toxin. So how many of us are eating toxin every day without, you know, realizing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you eat conventional food, you're taking in pesticides. You're taking in, you know, they're all usually wrapped in plastic. So, you know, plastic, you know, chemical can leach into the food. You're going to be eating it. And a lot of conventional food is also, you know, contain GMO.
Let's talk about GMO a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'll put myself in this category here. Okay, so GMO. I have a theory. My non-medically educated brain thinks that GMO is just the center of all evil where it comes to dietary issues. And I
agree with you.
Good. I'm glad I'm on the right track, because, you know, you didn't have celiac disease in the degree that you have it today.
No,
you didn't have gluten allergies in the degree that you have it today. And
right.
It seems like, you know, starting younger and younger in people, we're eating this GMO modified wheat, which is in everything. I wonder, I don't know, and it's total speculation on my part, if we stopped eating GMO foods, would some of these issues, you know, go away? Would we be able to not eat wheat and corn and all of the things without having the developing...
Oh, yeah. In fact, there are clinical, you know, evidence that the people, when they stop eating GMO food, their chronic problem goes away. And hormonal problem, you know, go away. And well, first of all, not only GMO is a problem in and of itself, because when you put foreign genes, you know, you put like a fish gene into strawberry, you know, what, and then a lot of them, you know, they, you know, just you don't know what the gene's gonna do inside a cell, because you know they switch around and they, you know, recombine without, you know, without control. You know, you cannot really control once you insert a gene into a cell, a nucleus. But another problem is most GMO food is designed to withstand, you know, the pesticides that they are, you know, with,
right.
So that they can, you know, spray away, you know. So, like, Stephanie Sanez, just recently released an article peer-reviewed journal. They found that the glyphosate, the Roundup pesticide, is actually damage our detoxification enzymes. You know, the cytochrome P450.
Mm-hmm.
So when it damages the enzyme, and then it's going to be harder for us to detoxify any toxins that we're exposed to. So we kind of like put, you know, more fuel on the fire. It's gonna, you know, we just like, you know, again, we're stuck between a hard, you know, a rock and a hard place. We have no way to be able to get rid of this toxin when you are continuously bombarded by, you know, the glyphosate chemicals. And also, another thing is, even if you don't eat GMO food, but if you eat non-GMO conventional food, you know, because they are using, they're spraying glyphosate on a lot of commodity crops like wheat in order to basically increase the yield. So you're still going to be getting a lot of this pesticide in your if you're eating non-GMO conventional food. So it's just really hard unless you know, it's just the only way you can get around is to eat organic food or grow it yourself.
So yeah, it's almost impossible to get away. So that was my next question. If you can make all the alterations in your diet, I mean, it seems like it's almost monumental. It's like you can't get away from it. Excuse me, because it's everywhere. Can these issues be turned around if you can make enough modifications in your diet, or do you have to live in a little bubble?
Definitely. You can turn it around. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, how much you can do. Sometimes, you know, maybe, you know, you can't do everything, but, you know, as much as you can, you know, to avoid this toxin and supply your body with nutrients, the body can do, you know, pretty wonderful thing. You know, like, let's just look at our, you know, the way we eat today. We eat, you know, such a limited variety. You know, if you look at, you know, you can count most Americans, you know, we can count our diet with, you know, one hand or two hands. We eat wheat, we eat potato, we eat, you know, hamburger, corn syrup. What else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, breads and corns and
tortillas. They're all made out of a very small, you know, small selection of food. Most of them are, you know, highly processed. So the idea is, so we have to focus on eating food that are, you know, nutrient dense. As it offer, nutrient dense means that it offer as much nutrients as you can get. You know, like things that like fresh fruit and vegetables. I always tell my patients that, you know, if your food do not rot within a week, don't eat it. Because real food, they are alive. You know, they rot. You know, they don't just sit around.
It's not normal.
Right. So if you eat nutrient-dense food, it gives you the nutrients to detox. You know, for example, like, this one simple, you know, thing that our ancestor used to eat that we don't do anymore is, you know, our ancestors do not, you know, they don't just throw away everything except the leanest cut of meat. You know, they eat the skin, they eat the bone, they eat the gristle, they eat everything.
The organs?
Right, the organs, but then, you know, one of the things is that a lot of them, they use the bone and the, you know, tendons, and they would, you know, they would cook it into a thick broth. And this tendon, you know, bone broth contains a substance called glycine. Glycine is a simple amino acid. It's the most simple amino acid that you can get. But they found that, you know, it is really important for, you know, to help us detox. So we eat the leanest meat. And then we miss out on the nutrients that you can find. A simple thing that we throw away, you know, the bones of animals. So we eat chicken, I remember I went to a friend's house for Thanksgiving, and after dinner, and he was wrapping up turkey, you know, bones, and with still a lot, you know, the skin and everything, you know, intact. And I say, what are you doing with that? I said, oh, I'm throwing it away. No, I'll take it home.
So is that the secret to
home?
Is that the secret to mom's chicken soup when you're sick?
Yeah, uh-huh. the chicken soup, you know, they have like all these, you know, not only that, they have like you know, amino acids and that can help you, you know, combat the histamine release, and so we boost your immune system. But like the glycine in the bone broth, you know, just among so many different things, is you know, it can help you detox. You know, also improves your digestion.
Okay, let's talk about soy a little bit. Because soy, yeah, a few years ago, was the hottest property in the health food industry. Soy was, and now it's in everything, and it's really not good for you.
What is that?
Soy.
Soy, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, soy is 99%, you know, GMO. And so it's full of GMO, you know, foreign genes, and also glyphosate, Roundup. And soy itself has, you know, like, we know, we learned a lot about it, you know, it has, one of the things is it can suppress our thyroid because it has a substance called glycogen. It actually can block our thyroid from, you know, from upticking, from making, you know, thyroid hormone. But it's one of the highest source of phytic acid. So what is phytic acid? It's a chemical, it's, you know, it's a compound, it's a fiber-like compound that will block our ability to absorb minerals. So in fact, that, you know, one of the things that it can block is zinc, and when zinc is blocked, it's going to affect our immune system. It's going to affect our ability to detox and ability to make, in fact, making digestive, you know, acid, you know, hydrochloric acid requires zinc, and so. So when you eat soy, not only it block, you know, not only block your thyroid, it block your ability to absorb minerals. On top of that, it's very hard to digest, so it can create digestive problems. So once you have like undigested food in your system, in your gut, it's going to cause, you know, inflammation, gas, and it can, you know, eventually, if you continuously supplying this undigested food in your gut, it's going to cause irritation eventually. And it can, you know, lead to, you know, other problems.
Okay. All right. So, Dr. Lee, just to kind of wrap it up. So, basically, I mean, what we want to stay away from, we kind of know we need to stay away from processed foods and GMO foods and those kinds of things. But if we suspect that we're having a detox problem, an autoimmune problem, what are some things that we could look for, and how should we go about correcting it?
Okay, first of all, so we know eat food that would help us, you know, help us detox. Vegetables, the cabbage family, the cruciferous family of vegetable has a tremendous amount of, you know, different nutrients that can help us detox. You know, the calcium glucurate, you know, you can get very expensive supplement that will have, you know, support your liver detox, but it's actually, you know, found naturally in broccoli and in cabbage, but also in orange. Oranges, you know, especially the white, the pulpy, you know, the pulp that, you know, you throw away. It's actually mm-hmm. very high in, you know, in calcium glucurate. So, like, you know, when you eat fruits and vegetables, you know, eat the whole fruit, you know, like oranges, you know, a lot of time I tell my patients to just peel away the orange part and leave the pulp, you know, the pest, you know, around there, and then just, you know, put it in a blender, and then just, you know, and make a smoothie, you know, with it, or eat the whole thing. And then, you know, like bone broth is very, very detoxing, you know, because of that, you know, the amino acids in it. And also the, you know, the gelatin, it helps improve your diet, you know, improve your absorption of nutrients. And drinking water. So many of us, you know, like we don't drink enough water. And water, you know, again, you know, it's very polluted these days, so, you know, purify your water. And most of municipal water could be loaded with not only the fluoride and the chlorine, but it could also be laced with all kinds of pharmaceutical drugs. because when we take the drugs, you know, we go to the bathroom, and the residue are still active. Where do they go?
Yeah, down the toilet.
Right. So they found that our drinking water right out from the tap can be laced with like all kinds of pharmaceutical drugs. So
wow.
I always say I always filter my water. I haven't drank any tap water. Most of my life. Ever since I learned about it in grad school when I went for my degree in nutrition back in the 80s. So, another thing I would say, there's some using spices. There's a lot of different spices that will help us detox, you know, like turmeric and ginger and onions and garlic. And they will supply nutrients to help us detox. And
So if you want to learn more about all of these issues, how these toxins can affect your health, how you can get rid of them, go to theinnatehealer.blog.com. And Dr. Lee, if people want to get a hold of you, you have a newsletter because I receive your newsletter. How can people get on your mailing list?
They can email me or go to my website, drjolee.com. It's drjolee.com. And they can sign up for my newsletter there.
Okay, very good. I hope you'll come back often and give us updates on this. This is a really hot topic. I think as time goes on and people are very, a lot of the folks here in the Patriot Movement are plugged into the whole issue with Monsanto and how it affects our food chain and that kind of thing. And, and everybody is asking the questions about how are these things affecting our health.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to.
I think the more you know, I think the more we know, the better protected we are, because I really truly believe that the only way to heal ourselves is to first of all heal our mind. So,
absolutely, and get informed, and get engaged, and maybe change some of this down the road. Thank you, Dr. Lee. I really appreciate you being with me tonight. I hope you'll come back soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and wrap it up.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks. Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
That's right. We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we had a great show for you tonight, folks. Great information. Thank you to Dr. Lee, and thank you to Paul Ellison. There have been some things going on around the state and around the country that I want you to kind of be aware of. Told you at the top of the show that we would talk about right to work, and we're going to do that. We'll do that right now. Okay, so here's the deal with the right to work thing. Today they had a hearing in the Missouri House. Missouri is most likely in line, it's never going to happen. But right now, we could be the 25th state to become a right-to-work state. There are so many issues with right-to-work that make it so it's just important for us to become a right-to-work state, folks, because our economy is in the trash. But the problem is Missouri is a very heavily unionized state, has been forever. There was a great article that I picked up. It's an older article on Red State. And it just kind of outlines, you know, why right to work would be so great, you know, how it would help the economy. Let's see if I can. Okay, upside of right to work. Economic impact of enacting right to work laws has been largely beneficial to states that have enacted it. They do attract more business and incomes do rise. And it just totally negates the whole argument that the right to work for less, the whole right to work for less argument. In that regard, because there is less union density in right-to-work states, unions decrying the fact that right-to-work entices companies to leave non-right-to-work states is inaccurate. More states flee more states flee right-to-work states. In Indiana's case, according to one study, if Indiana had adopted such a law in 1977, by 2008, per capita income would have been $2,925 higher, equating to $11,700 higher per family of four. Another way to put it, Indiana's personal income in 2008 would have been $241.9 billion, and 8.4% more than the actual $223.2 billion, nearly $19 million in annual income was lost because of Indiana's lack of right-to-work law. Folks, I can tell. I sat in a Packeter meeting last Friday with Ann Zare, who was there begging forgiveness for her participation in a union rally. She's a Republican in a very Republican county, participated and made a great speech to the union workers about why we don't need right to work, and she was begging the forgiveness of all the Republicans in this Packeter meeting. And if the argument is coming, folks, because most of the Republicans that are opposing right to work, many of them, let's say, are coming from St. Charles County, and their argument is going to be that right to work is not such a great deal, and we can get it done with all of these other little incendiary ways and little paycheck protection and all this other crap that they're throwing out, and that's going to be good enough to take care of the problem. And, folks, it's not going to be good enough to take care of the problem. They're going to start lying to you about the benefits of right to work. Don't buy it. It's a bunch of hooey. And which leads me to my other issue, okay? So here in Missouri, we have several right-to-work bills floating around the legislature. The one that is gaining steam is a bill that requires that it go on the ballot for the people to have their say. Okay, for one thing, I didn't send my legislators to Jefferson City so that they can continue to pass the buck, because they don't have the spine to make the vote and put their name on a vote. okay? It's their job. I sent them there to do their job, and they're kicking the can back to the folks so that they can be off the hook. They don't have to take responsibility for what happens. Okay, here's another thing, and I've had conversations with other organizations across the country about this issue. It seems like the Tea Party and the grassroots movement is all, you know, they're just so desperate to get right to work. They're going to take anything that's handed to them. Right now what's being handed to them is a ballot initiative to put right to work on the ballot. When right to work goes on the ballot, it will be defeated because the union will pour tens of millions of dollars into campaigning against it. We are not Wisconsin. Missouri does not have the momentum that Wisconsin does. We do not, and not that we need a Republican governor, because we have a Republican supermajority in the legislature that if they had the backbone, they would stand by their conviction and represent the people that elected them to do the conservative thing and pass the law, but we will lose right to work forever if they put it on the ballot in August. Unless somebody can explain to me why I'm wrong, if you put it away, you will never resurrect it. How will you go back to the people after August and tell them we need to continue to fight right to work after it has been voted down? I told you at the top of the hour, we're living in a reality. At the top of the show, we're living in a reality where people are disengaged and uninformed, and you cannot market to them with facts and figures and logic. They do not understand it. They will not listen to it long enough to understand it. This is the right to work situation here in Missouri. The average disengaged voter will not listen to the facts and the reality. You will not be able to market to them. The unions will win this battle. They will outspend us. We will not have the ability to win this issue. Unless somebody can tell me why the grassroots is pushing for this ballot initiative to go through the legislature when we have another perfectly good bill in the House of Representatives that puts right to work up for a vote in the legislature that passes it, which is the way it should be done, which is what the grassroots should be pushing for, I'm going to continue to speak out against this. Now, if I'm wrong, please contact me, lpn@thepatriotnation.net. Tell me why I'm wrong, and I will eat crow, and I will explain it here on the air. I will have you on the air to explain it. But, folks, this is a very dangerous – I mean, the legislature is setting you up to fail. They don't want right to work. They're all getting money from the unions, even the Republicans, most of the Republicans. They're in the Republicans' pocket. They're bought. They're paid for. They are owned. They're not working for you. You are being led down the path. Do not follow this Pied Piper over the cliff, folks. Insist that your Republican legislature votes for right to work on the floor instead of bouncing this out to a ballot initiative. Because if it goes to the ballot, if it goes on the ballot, it's gone forever. And that's all I have to say about right to work this week. I'll probably have a rant next week as well. It's a big deal, folks. We'll have some folks on to kind of explain this as it goes. I've been told by other folks that they just want to pass it through. Any movement is good movement. Well, I'm not so sure that that's the case, but we'll continue to debate this issue as long as it needs to be debated. Something else that I wanted to close with, and I found out about this from my folks at Operation Mutual Aid. They're on their way to Nevada. And you've probably heard about this today. There's a rancher in Nevada, and we're going to keep up on this story as it unfolds. Well, a few months ago, you heard about Baker's Green Acres, the Michigan farmer, the pig farmer in Michigan who was being attacked by the government. Mark Baker's been on the show several times to talk about his plight. I think he's actually won his case. I think they finally backed off, and the court has ruled that he can, you know, raise pigs and whatever the heck else he wants on his farm. But the government attacked him. He spent tens of thousands of dollars fighting this court case, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars fighting this in court to maintain the right to raise pigs. Well, now there's a Nevada rancher. Been a rancher for generations, And all of a sudden, the state of Nevada decided that the state property, the government land up there, they were no longer going to allow farmers to run their cattle on there. And they've just been after this guy. They've been shooting his cattle. There's snipers up there. The military is up there going after this guy because they're going to shut him down. Well, this is a story that we're going to watch as time goes by, folks. It's a big deal. Don't know why. You know, the government seems to be going after our farmers, but they certainly are. And this case is no different. So stay tuned to Missouri Grassroots Coalition for more developing details on that. We'll put stories up on the Facebook page and on the website about that issue. It's a pretty important situation, folks. It's huge. You know, the government is just attacking people left and right, stomping all over their state sovereignty, stomping all over their rights and their ability to make a living. This is no different. It's just atrocious. Hope to have Cindy McGee back with us next week. She's, like I said, enjoying some family time. Join Dave on Friday and Saturday nights, Mr. Hour of Truth and State Sovereignty Issues, and Cynthia Davis on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. We'll be back here Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, Culture Vigilante. I hope you'll join us again. And until next week, good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.